Hello, all you positive heads out there. Thanks for tuning your beautiful brainwaves into the Positive Head Podcast, where you can always count on hearing fascinating discussions and interviews with the best and brightest consciousness change makers that are out there working tirelessly to help catalyze change and expand awareness all across Spaceship Earth. And if you enjoy the Positive Head Podcast, please be sure to subscribe and follow us on iTunes. And if you would, please give us a good rating and review as well. Even if you don't want to take the time to write out a review, at least take 5 seconds to give the show a star rating. I've been asking for more reviews and ratings for some time now, and based on the number of listeners the show has, I can see very few people have actually taken the time to rate or review the show. So I'll ask again, really nicely, please rate us on iTunes. You don't want me to have to ask again because, well, you may not be sorry, but I could quite possibly be weeping gently like an infant girl. And really, nobody needs that kind of problem. Also, this week's episode is sponsored by Procabulary.org. Procabulary offers a brilliant new online language course that I just recently completed myself called Core Language Upgrade. The course material itself is designed to help you analyze and then reprogram the way you use your words and language to create your reality. I personally believe the words you choose to speak or write out is referred to as spelling for a very good reason. You're literally casting an energetic spell every time you open your mouth, which means it's of the utmost importance that you have a foundational understanding about the power or lack of power that the words you're choosing to use conjures up. I strongly believe language mastery is a highly important skill set that way too few people have taken it upon themselves to become educated on. And, you know, for those of you that are regular listeners of this podcast, you know I'm constantly talking about how we all create our reality with our thoughts and words. And what Procabulary does is actually provide you with an incredibly easy to follow roadmap that shows you how to go about reprogramming your language so you can start getting better results in every aspect of your life. And the great thing about the Core Language Upgrade course is that it only takes about 10 minutes a day, spanned over 21 days to complete. I personally found the minimum daily time requirement made it really easy to digest and assimilate the empowering information I was receiving each day. Now, as a Positive Head Podcast listener, if you decide to go to Procabulary.org and purchase any of their online courses, you automatically get $50 if you use the promo code POSITIVEHEAD, all one word, on the checkout page. I personally recommend everyone starts with a beginner course. It's called Core Language Upgrade, and the retail price for that course is $299. I'd say it's worth every penny, but with the Positive Head promo code, it only costs you $249 after your discount. Also, if you need more convincing about the power of Procabulary, check out the Positive Head podcast where I actually interview Procabulary co-founder Mark England, and we discuss language mastery in great detail. All right, all you positive heads, on this episode, I'm extremely excited to have Kimberly and Foster Gamble here with me on the show. This dynamic duo are not only husband and wife, but they are also the brains and talent behind the enlightening and at times somewhat frightening documentary film Thrive, which in just a few short years since its release online has been viewed by more than 30 million people around the world. Hello, Kimberly. Hello, Foster. Welcome to the show.
Hi there, Brandon. Thank you for having us.
Thanks a lot. Good to be here.
Oh, yeah, such a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this for many months now. I've been a fan of the documentary that you guys put out a few years ago now. I've told many people about it, and I think it's very thorough the way you kind of lay everything out and step people through your progression into, you know, the whole all the information that you uncovered. I think it was succinct and really helps to lay it out in a way that people can grasp, and, you know, because it's a lot of information.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. It was our intention to kind of just connect dots that can often seem like isolated incidents and paint a comprehensive enough picture of what's in the way of people thriving so that our solutions can be commensurate with the task and can really be leveraged and informed. So we're really very solution oriented, as the movie demonstrates. The whole last third of the film is about solutions, and it, our, you know, belief is that you just need to understand the problem in order to be effective in solving it.
Yeah, there Absolutely. Were certainly many people who thought we should just focus on one thing, mm-hmm. and others who wished that we had left this out or that out or something. But as Kimberly said, we were clear that our mission was to connect the dots, to actually show the whole pattern of what's going on behind the scenes in a way that we hadn't seen done before. And you're right, it was a tremendous amount of information and a lot of it challenging for a two-hour movie. And yet, no, we really respect people's natural intelligence and courage. And obviously, what we did resonated and continues to resonate with people all over the planet, because people really do want to know what's going on and what can we do about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's so brave and admirable, the road that you've went down. And maybe before we get into the details of what is covered in the documentary, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the history that led up to it. You know, Foster being from a very prominent family, all of you out there listening, I'm sure you've heard of Procter & Gamble. You're from the Gamble family, as in the company that makes all the household items that we've used over the years, like Tide, Charmin, Pringles, those are all Procter & Gamble products, correct?
That's correct, yeah. Yeah,
I was going to say, of course, you've grew up in this very prominent family, and here you've really taken a different kind of course than probably was expected you when you were a little guy. So I'm very curious what led to that and how you ended up doing what you've done.
Well, growing up in that family was a real gift in terms of the privilege that it gave me of inheriting some money from my grandparents that allowed me, when I came of age, to realize that it wasn't going to do any good for me to go through life complaining about my job, because if I actually managed that money well, I could choose what I wanted to do. And yeah, there's not a lot of people to talk to about that, but it really encouraged me to ask myself, okay, what am I here for? What does the world really need? And what can I accomplish? And I assumed when I was in college that most of the problems that I was seeing with, you know, various wars and environmental pollution and so forth would be solved quite quickly. I had no idea they were going to continue to get worse. So when I left college, I had been a filmmaker in college, and people assumed that I would go to Hollywood and make films. But I realized that I had no idea what anything that I had to say to the world that would be worth all the money and time and technical know-how and so forth that it takes to make a film. So I told my friends, you know, I'm going to try and find out what's in the way of our thriving. And when I find that out, and when I find solutions that are commensurate to the scope of the problem, then I'll make a movie. And I thought it might even be 5 years, you know, maybe even 10 years. Well, 40 years later, I finally sat down with Kimberly, and we talked it through and decided that we were ready to actually go for it. So that's really what led to us finding this particular mode of getting our research and our expression out to the world.
I wonder if you would have went this path had you known it was going to take you 40 years. That is quite a life journey.
No, I think sometimes nature works that way, that it unfolds the next, you know, level of the mountain climb after you reach a particular plateau. You go, oh, okay. Not there yet. In fact, that's what happened when the film came out. Kimberly and I thought we would just kind of, take it easy for a while then. But we realized that the movie very quickly spawned a spontaneously self-creating movement all over the world. There's now over 1,000 groups in close to 100 countries that are taking on hundreds of issues inspired by Thrive. That to us is a dream come true. But it's also was a whole new face of the mountain that we hadn't necessarily anticipated, but a very exciting one.
Yeah, congratulations on that. What an accomplishment.
Thank you. I'd like to add one thing, which is if anybody hasn't seen the movie, it's available for free at thrivemovement.com, and it's in 27 different languages. And I think the other part of the leading up to making it was that we really have a lot of love and appreciation and respect for people, and could see so many people, you know, motivated to work to make the world better, but really misguided in our assessment you know, spending so many years in research, that we felt that they were just misguided in that energy by not seeing the whole comprehensive picture of how what seemed like, you know, this ineptness that was causing all these problems was in fact, you know, a calculated agenda that had a few people benefiting it and great demise to the rest of us and to the planet. So it was really a way to address people in their highest, in the highest regard, which we had, and help, you know, move their and our efforts into those that could be the most impactful.
Yeah, I think that's a very important element to the documentary. And we'll get into kind of some of the information there. Of course, people will want to see the movie to get the full effect. It's over 2 hours long and just so well put together. But we'll dive into some of the topics that you discuss. But I think you bring up a really good point in it's a very important part of the documentary is that you're not just showing the issues that are out there and some of which are quite shocking, but you're also showing, hey, here's solutions. And you added that very key element of, you know, let's not just talk about problems. Let's focus on solutions, because really, you know, I'm someone who's a big proponent of the idea that what we, you know, where attention goes, energy flows, and what we give energy to, we create more of. And so it's always that kind of tricky balance. It's almost like walking the tightrope of, okay, we can't ignore these things that are going on, but we need to be careful not to give too much fear-based energy and so forth. And you guys talk about that a lot in the film, and I really resonate very strongly with that.
Yeah. I think it's very...
Go ahead, Kimberly.
Yeah, I just think it's really important to... If within the context of solutions, you know, if your goal is to be the most effective, awake, conscious person that you can be, then being aware of what's going on is an important part of that. And so our exposing the problem was always within the context of solutions. And I think the other part is that the relationship between consciousness and activism and our own personal lives and relation to ourselves and our spirits, and right, how that impacts our capacity to engage effectively in the world. And so it's not, we don't separate those things. You know, we really, all of our solutions are based on a personal relationship with yourself, because it doesn't matter, you know, whatever issue you look at anywhere in the world, there's improvement needed. So yeah, it would be easy to be overwhelmed by the problems. And I think, you know, one of the things about our solutions model that we can speak more to, but just the gist of it is that it begins with understanding your own, knowing your own purpose and passion. Because I think when you tune into that, there's a guidance there about what part of the problem are you here to help solve. Nobody can do it all, but when you tap into what you're here to do and engage your passion in it, then I think, one, we're more effective, two, it's much more fun, it's sustainable, it just works all the way around. So I think one of the things that we've worked hard to do through our solutions hub at thrivemovement.com and in all of the work that we've done in and since the movie, it's to help people remember that our relations with ourselves is the primary place to begin.
Yeah, I'd like to add something onto that as well, because I think this is such an important point. I think most likely, particularly for your audience, Brandon, because I know you do a lot with consciousness and metaphysical realms. And we have received letters from spiritual teachers and interdimensional beings and so forth from all over the planet, thanking us for including this critical information about the threats that we face, because they're having difficulties with their students and followers getting them to pay attention to what's in the shadow as well as what's in the light. And they thanked us for it, because they say it's an absolutely critical part of the spiritual path. And you quoted the where attention goes, energy flows. And I think that that's a really important insight, but that it also needs to be unpacked for a lot of people in the New Age, in the transformational, in the consciousness movements, because like that's a single level insight to be careful where you put your energy. But if that's interpreted as, everything's okay, there's no difference between good and bad, everything's an illusion, evil is necessary, it balances the dark with the light, and all that kind of stuff, I think that can be a really severe trap that has actually been intentionally set for the millions of people. If you unpack it to the next level of subtlety, it's really important, because if you put your attention into where we're being threatened, whether it's the global domination agenda, the banking schemes, or a child molester in your neighborhood, if you put your attention to the fact that that's going on, but you put it there in a positive way, then it shines the light, where the energy flows toward what you can do about that problem. And then you become an effective agent for change. And one of our friends, Neil Rogan, who was one of the co-writers in Thrive and member of the Transformational Leadership Council and so forth, has a very succinct kind of dry way of putting deep insights. And he said at one point, it's not enough to just become more conscious. It matters what you're becoming conscious of. So these challenging areas of information, I believe, are a critical part. Now, it may not be that everybody is ready to face them at a particular time or with a particular amount of their time, but for those who are ready, actually our lives and well-being, I think, hang in the balance of including that in our conscious development.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Foster. I think, just having your head in the clouds and everything's all good, no problems, and instead knowing that the dark is part of the light, it's something that actually needs to be assimilated and transmuted in a sense. And I love at the end of the film, there's actually an analogy, someone you have on, I forget who it is, where they compare the caterpillar and the butterfly, and how it's all about this destructive thing. And in some sense, the caterpillar turns into this beautiful butterfly. And when you can look at it through the lens of these forces that are doing a lot of these kind of dark things on our planet are actually playing a role to give us the opportunity to create the new Earth we all want to see and the healed planet that we want to see.
Right. And the role that we're called to, I don't think it's to accept that reality is real, but not to just sit back on the couch and go, okay, well, therefore there's nothing to do about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'd love to dive in a little bit and, kind of go through some of the sections of the movie. If you guys are up for that, I think, you touch on such interesting topics, one of which I think you begin at the very beginning talking about the vector equilibrium and the torus and some of this, these symbols that have been found in ancient cultures. Can you explain a little of that to the audience?
Sure, it's my favorite topic.
Yes, I noticed.
And I'll kind of back into it by saying that now that we've been out there and involved with a network of thousands and thousands of people around the planet who are doing incredibly insightful and effective solutions to virtually every problem that we've seen, we have seen that the main common denominator to the solution is that it's always a matter of recognizing and then honoring and then restoring the wholeness of natural system, whether that's getting the GMOs and the pesticides out of our foods, stopping the monoculture and going back to organic polyculture in the ecosystems through which we grow our foods, or the honest money and voluntary exchange of a true economy. And I could go on and on in each sector. And the major symbol of wholeness, and where wholeness is the key to solving all these problems, the major symbol of that, and it's much more than a symbol, it's actually the dynamic that's going on, is this torus. And for those of your listeners who may not be familiar with the word yet, or might not have seen Thrive, The torus is a mathematical word that describes a donut-shaped object. In other words, it's got a continuous surface and a hole in the middle. And in real terms in the cosmos, these toruses take the form of whirlpool vortices. And it turns out that an atom, you know, a cell, the Earth field itself, the solar system, the galaxy, and the cluster of galaxies, and now they're even saying, the mathematicians are saying, the universe itself has to be a toroidal dynamic. It turns out that the universe is showing us a blueprint for sustainability, because this is the only pattern that sustains itself in a continuous medium, which the universe is. So it's really helpful to realize that, oh, if every sustainable system is a torus, and our major challenge as a species is to try to create sustainable systems and sustain our species on this planet, then it would be very helpful to understand the torus and understand the principles that are involved. A torus is always centered. It's always balanced. It always is exchanging in balance the energy going into a system and out of a system. And on and on. There are a number of principles that we have identified for the torus. And if you take that and then apply it in areas like economics, as I said, or in the media, or a really good one is in terms of our accessing energy. You know, we've been creating explosions and burning things and smashing things together to get our energy throughout recorded history. And now we're on the brink of destroying all of life through doing that at the atomic level. So it's no coincidence that people are discovering at this point in history that if you actually create a technology which mimics this toroidal pattern, and then you get it rotating, you get the energy of that system rotating, and then tune it to ambient energy, guess what? It acts like an antenna and just draws out free, clean, and safe energy out of the universe. So the torus has huge implications, and I would say the last thing about it, just in a short description, is to realize that each of us is a torus at every level, from the atomic to cellular level, but also the electromagnetic field around our body is a toroidal field, and also even our skin. You know, it's a continuous surface with the throat hole in the middle. So it's time that we understood the torus, given that it's who we are and it's what we need to know.
Yeah. Very well said.
You know, we in the movie, what we do is we really just track some of the ancient cultures and the way that the symbols of the torus, understanding both the structure and the flow of that, have been encoded in different cultures for a long, long time. And how could that be? Which leads into the whole thing about extraterrestrial influence in our evolution. And so the first part of the movie, that's really what it has to do with.
Also how that choice of where to start came about, because we had over 100 versions of the script starting in all different places before we finally decided. And as I was working on the third chapter of the script, the Global Domination Agenda, I was just kind of at a loss one day, and I went to sought out Kimberly and said, I got a problem. I said, I don't know how to tell people that their hair is on fire without freaking them out. And her response really ended up shaping the narrative of the film, which was she, and I think this is a great example of the feminine wisdom. She just said, oh, well, what I would do is I would say to someone, look at this beautiful bowl of water. And by the way, your hair is on fire. So that's what we did. We wanted to the bowl of water is the understanding that if we can harmonize with this toroidal energy dynamic, we can solve every problem that we know about so far and be prepared to evolve to the next level.
That's certainly some feminine wisdom for you there. And I think that you know, you hear sometimes the concept of, okay, if you're going to correct someone, first pay them a compliment. And in a sense, right, you're doing just that. And, you know, to speak a little bit more what Kimberly touched on, the, you know, as you, so as you started to dive into exploring this, the Taurus and the potential for free energy, then you started uncovering people that had worked on free energy systems and the repression that apparently has went on for, you know, a century or more, right?
Yes. When I just described talking about the Taurus, how when you do these technologies correctly, you can access all this clean, free, safe energy. Obviously, anyone hearing that would go, wow, that could solve a lot of issues in my life and across the planet. So how come we don't have that? And so, yes, I discovered as I finally began understanding the geometry of the universe and began meeting some of these inventors, I began realizing that that most, if not all of them, had been threatened. They had been intimidated, and some of them had actually disappeared. Some of them had been killed their process of trying to get this knowledge to the world. So in the film, we go into the notion of, well, who would want that? Who would not want humanity to have access to decentralized clean energy? And that's what ends up leading to the next couple of chapters, because in order to find that out, you know, who would be suppressing these inventors? One way to find out the key to a big mystery like that, as I was taught by my dear journalist wife, Kimberly, is to follow the money. And that's the next chapter. So as we followed the money upstream to the top of the pyramid and into the banks and into the secret societies and so forth, it turns out that those who not only have a motive of greed, but their primary motive is actually to control the world, to control everybody's life. Of course, they wouldn't want people to be financially prosperous and healthy and have, plenty of energy. And so as we followed the money, we realized that there's a handful of people who actually don't want us to thrive. And it's a harsh realization because, you know, you and I and the people in your network, we don't wake up every morning thinking, how can we destroy lives? How can we control lives and dominate the world? You know, it sounds like some kind of trite villain from a James Bond novel, except unfortunately, it's true. And once you realize that, then it starts to make a whole lot more sense why we're not just eating organic food and why we don't have, you know, a healthy, honest currency, and why the justice system and the political systems are, and the educational systems and the health systems are so messed up. This is not just human incompetence. This is not, you know, an accident of fate. And fortunately, through the internet and through many researchers like ourselves who have been doing this and are using the internet to get the news out, people are waking up. The fact that a very small percentage of the population really are sociopathic. You know, they don't care about other people and they're devoted to domination. So once, this is another good example of what we were talking about at first. It's an unpleasant realization, but once you know it, then it can inform your solution. And so that's what leads us into the third and fourth chapters of the film.
Right. And I want to dig in a little bit on that. But before we do dig in on that, is one of the things as far as the, you know, the repressed free energy and so forth that you talk about in the film and Kimberly mentioned very briefly, is it kind of left you wondering and ultimately led you to, well, how did the ancient cultures who have, you know, this symbolism like the flower of life and things like that, that represent these sort of are sort of like two dimensional representations of these energy systems and the Taurus and so forth. How did they know about this stuff? How did you know, this advanced kind of concepts? And it led you to kind of investigate the extraterrestrial phenomenon a little bit more, because you have, of course, we all are familiar with the popularity of shows like Ancient Aliens and things like that. And maybe you could touch a little bit on what, as you dug in to explore that phenomenon, what you uncovered.
Yeah, that one really took me by surprise, because I actually had an experience of being quite close to a UFO my last year in college. But I frankly didn't give it a whole lot more thought, certainly wasn't any kind of UFO investigator. But my passion for physics and geometry led to the energy realizations. And then, as you say, that led me to to the ancient cultures and a realization that, oh my goodness, you know, we're seeing it in the crop circles, we're seeing it in the pyramids, we're seeing it in all these ancient etchings and so forth, the same fundamental realizations of the torus and then of the vector equilibrium, which is this fundamental geometry. It's the geometry that's the mother of all the material world, all of the symmetry patterns that we see, the beautiful 3, 4, and 5-fold symmetries that we see in flowers and crystals and, you know, the spirals on our fingertips and in our hair and so forth. All of that comes out of the combination of this structural pattern of the vector equilibrium and the flow pattern of the torus. And this particular knowledge is encoded in just countless ancient cultures going back literally millennia. So right. It kind of blew wide open my notion of just kind of a simple evolution story on planet Earth. Either there were cultures that evolved on planet Earth that were, you know, way more advanced than us, and then all trace of them was obliterated, or ancient cultures during recorded history were visited from elsewhere by beings who had been evolving for longer than we had, and had mathematical and physics knowledge that would enable them to access energy anywhere in the universe, and therefore have the propellant as well as the ability to alter time and space so that they could actually get here from either other solar systems, other galaxies, or other vibrational planes of existence. But in any case, the evidence is overwhelming that we not only are being visited by multiple species, but have been for centuries. And once you wrap around that, then it makes a whole lot of sense that they would pass on a certain amount of that knowledge, particularly when somebody goes to the trouble of building something like the Great Pyramid. It's no wonder that a tremendous amount of this knowledge was literally built into the structure.
Yeah, and when you know, some of the statistics that you talk about, and this is, of course, a subject matter that I've never really talked about too much on the show, but I find very fascinating. And so I thought it was really interesting how your own investigation kind of naturally led you to this realm. And of course, you have a very succinct way of bringing the information to the surface. And, you know, you stated some things like, you know, over 4,000 cases of UFOs reported landing with physical evidence, over 3,500 pilot cases. I mean, these are trained witnesses. This isn't your drunk Uncle Bob sitting on the back patio. You know, 3,500 yeah. pilots that have reported seeing a UFO, hundreds of cases of them being tracked at going, you know, tens of thousands of miles per hour, disappearing and reappearing, including, I think you mentioned the head of the FAA. So these are all very credible people. So it's not only that they were here in the past that your research is demonstrating, with some of this knowledge that we really have no way of no other good explanation as to how the ancients knew this stuff. But, you know, that it's still happening here now, yeah, even with crop circles. Once again, you know, you have over 5,000 of those have appeared. And of course, you've had people that have tried to make them and have come forward as like, OK, this is, which is a great way, by the way, if you're going to try and debunk something, pay right. a couple. Speaking of drunk Uncle Bob, you know, pay him $100 to go out at night with a bottle of whiskey and stomp around in a field and then say he's responsible for all of them. But meanwhile, there's some of these are so elaborate in the, you know, electromagnetic fields and strange magnetic particles that you talk about, you know, that are in and around these crop circles. It's all when you start stacking it all together, it doesn't sound so crazy.
And I think the most important point for me in this whole kind of amazing unfolding drama over centuries is why would ancient cultures, why would potential extraterrestrials, why would they bother to create these patterns that would be seen in the future? And we mentioned in Thrive that as best we can tell, the reason they're doing it is to help us understand how energy works and therefore how to relate harmoniously to it. Because if we don't, you know, we will blow ourselves up. And I'm glad to see it looks like they don't want that to happen. You know, they can't right. do it for us. They can't get, thank goodness they're not just coming in and taking over, but they seem to be trying to keep us safe by shutting down nuclear silos when they get turned on. And, you know, one of the little clips in Thrive was when the military was sending a missile to the moon where they were going to set off several nuclear weapons. And the guy who was doing the high-speed photography witnessed these UFO ships coming into the frame and laser beams coming out and literally them knocking the nuclear weapons off the missiles so they'd fall down into the sea. So they seem to be kind of taking care of us like the way a parent would of a toddler learning to climb a jungle gym for the first time. But they also seem to realize that we need to figure this stuff out ourselves if we're going to be a sustainable species.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that was a fascinating story that actually the guy shares firsthand in Thrive. And it's just incredible. And of course, there's all kinds of other accounts of people who are at nuclear facilities and the, everything becoming disarmed at key moments and things like that. So it's just, there's just so much evidence when you start looking at it. And I thought it was really interesting how, you actually had several people that you referenced in the film who were abductees who drew the tourists or claimed to be abductees and saw these propulsion systems on these craft and that they were actually Taurus propulsion systems or Taurus-like.
That was just two stories. We've heard that from many, many people who were either abducted or most of the ones we talked to were literally invited onto the ship and agreed to go. It was particularly those ones who were shown the drive of the ship, and they often when we interviewed them, they would not know each other, but they would report not only the same energy dynamic, they would report the same species that they had encountered this with. So, I've never been on a ship, I've never seen an extraterrestrial in incorporated form, but my common sense has definitely over the years leaned toward. The evidence is overwhelming that this is the real phenomenon.
I want to say something about that, too, because in this, I think for listeners, it's really important in these times, like, what is discerning open-mindedness have to do with our getting out of the mess that we're in? This gamble, family heritage and Princeton education and a pretty, straight beginning for Foster, and to use his own intelligence and ours in the course of research to take in evidence and allow your own common sense and your own experience to inform what it is that you're inquiring about. What is the next natural question that's emerging and not allow it to be shut down by the fact that it's been, made taboo. And so I think that's a really important part of all of this because I don't think it's possible to figure out what's really going on or engage the radical level of solutions that are needed without opening our minds to things that we're not expecting to find out or to entertain. I know when Foster got into learning about these new energy technologies and just this whole alive universe that's, packed with infinite energy that can be harnessed in this way. And I know for me, just the kind of spiritual experience of seeing energy come out of, what I learned was a vacuum in the universe. It's like, clearly it's not a vacuum. It's a plenum of infinite possibility, and they could plug a hairdryer in and instead of it depleting, it's not like now if you plug a hairdryer in you hear the energy kind of take a dip there, it just pulls in more.
Right.
Will pull in whatever's needed, and I think how all that relates is that what is the natural next question for anybody in their own process of inquiry into what's going on and what's your purpose and what are you here for and all of that kind of stuff is to really stay open-minded and discerning at the same time about what might be true, because Foster was certainly not raised to be getting into ETs and figuring out how all this stuff goes. But I think it's a tribute to that quality that allowed us to put the picture together that we did that became Thrive.
Yeah, it's a key point. Keeping an open mind is so crucial. And I always say, you know, would it be any stranger than the fact that we're here talking now? I mean, reality is very strange when you look at it from all angles. And we get so accustomed to, oh, this is normal. And then you have, of course, organized religion that paints a certain picture. And, you know, a lot of times it's like, hold on, if you think of some of this stuff logically, it's like, would it be any stranger for there to be beings, you know, here we just learned in the last, you know, last few days about flowing water on Mars, right? It's like if one planet over that's happening, it's inevitable that there's life everywhere. So, and as you even talk about in the documentary, if there's a planet much like Earth out there who that is just a million years older than we are, which is nothing in the cosmic scale, there, think of how advanced and how far behind all the problems we face are in their society.
Yeah, really strange would be that we're one planet amongst a billion solar systems in our galaxy, amongst a billion galaxies, and that we would somehow be the only sentient life.
That would be strange. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, one of the things we touched on was, of course, you've investigated this kind of free energy, got excited about this possibility, and then discovered after doing some investigation that, you know, a lot of it has been squashed, or any advancements that were being made were being squashed. And that led you to follow the money. And that's one of the things that I think, you know, for some people, it's incredible that how few of people have actually took the time to understand the truth behind the monetary system. Maybe you can take a moment and just kind of explain what your research uncovered.
Kimberly, you want to talk about that? You were the one who taught me to follow the money.
Well, I think the initial sort of, you know, breakthrough understanding was that when you can control money, how much of it's in circulation, what's its value, what's people's different access to it, you really can control their behavior. So the power of money and the power of that comes from understanding money is really huge. And in this day and age, you know, so many wars are actually played out economically, these economic sanctions. And, you know, when you understand what's really going on in terms of currency wars behind what shows up as wars that manifest, you know, physically with bombs and the rest. So for us, it was really just taking the time, you know, to understand that the Federal Reserve is a private corporation of elite bankers who can make up the rules and make up the money and determine what's going on in people's lives in this huge way. So we unpack that and do it in as user-friendly a way as possible to really help, you know, these things that are intentionally made to be so complex that you're supposed to go, oh, the experts need to deal with that. I can't understand it. It's too complicated. When it's like, well, wait a minute. What is money? You know, money is just something that people need to have in order to exchange goods and services with each other. So if it's too complicated for us to understand, then something's wrong. And right. So, you know, one of the ways that we were able to use our privilege of time, that's what the, you know, inheritance provided, was the chance to have time to do the research to figure out how it really works. And whether that's, wait, what is the Federal Reserve and when was it formed and how does it operate and how does it function now? You know, to look into that, and then what's the relationship around the world with money. And that's something that I will say for anybody interested that we've really followed up with since Thrive has come out. We've had new insights and new information emerge for us to have an even bigger, better global understanding of the financial picture. And we've continued with blogs. So at ThriveMovement.com, we have the movie for free, but we also have over 100 different blogs that we've written since the movie came out, with updates on just about every subject that we cover in the film. And some of those have to do with money. But in any case, what we laid out is an understanding that the consolidation of money into the hands of very few people at the expense of everybody else is in fact a deliberate process, and they're able to achieve it. I think, when we made Thrive, that was a radical notion. I think now with the different bailouts and understanding what's, just how corrupt the whole system is, it's better known to people. But we also, one thing I can say for Thrive is sort of, shocking to people as it was in some ways. There's never been a single fact in Thrive that's been factually disputed. So we were very careful with the research that we did. We had our facts independently corroborated by professional fact checkers. And, it's hard to do, of course, because the media is owned by the same people who own the banks and own every other system that we have that we're influenced by. But we spent a lot of time on that so that what we claim we stand by, and it has never been able to be successfully disputed, as I say. So we unpack the money in a way that we hope and intend empowers people to have a basic enough understanding of how banking works. So something as simple as the fact that, banks use our deposits to make cheap loans to corporations, right? So, and they can multiply your deposit times at least 10 to do that. That's what fractional reserve banking is all about. So if you don't like coal power pollution and the threat of nuclear power annihilation on the planet, then it would be a good idea not to put your hard earned dollars into Bank of America, because Bank of America is, and Wells Fargo and Chase and these, banks that we mention in the movie and outline on the website, are the ones who make these loans to these, most corrupt corporations on the planet that are doing so much of the damage. And you can, in fact, deposit your money into local banks and credit unions. We have a link there under What Can I Do? And we outline the top 10 most effective actions. But we all, in that is banking locally, and we have a list of questions that you can ask a local bank and credit union to see that they're in fact using their deposits to make loans in your own community, so that it betters your own community and it, unfunds the problem at the same time. So a little bit of understanding goes a long ways toward empowering people in their everyday lives. It probably takes a few hours of real time to change your bank. It's a little bit of a hassle. But when you do that, you've actually made a big move toward aligning your actions with your values. And that's a huge part of the shift that's actually needed. And it's one of the places that, for me, understanding and knowledge come into this. Because once you do understand something like, how the banks use my deposits to do these destructive things, and I have, would I spend a few hours of my time to stop funding the destruction of the environment?
Right.
Yeah, I would, actually. And most.
Yeah, when you put it like that.
and so I think that, that's kind of how we try to break it down in a way that's very, methodical and sort of simple, so that you can then tune in and go, yeah, this is something that I care about enough, and now I have the tools to see how to do it.
Right. And, one of the things, and I encourage people, of course, to check that section out on the video, because you go into sort of, some details. I don't know. One of the things, I'm curious what you guys think. Have you seen Zeitgeist, the Zeitgeist movies, where they talk quite a bit about the monetary system as well?
Sure. Yeah, I think Peter Joseph and his team did a fantastic job of laying out a lot of the problems with the corrupt banking system. When it comes to how to correct those, we go a very different direction than right. he does, but I really admire and I'm grateful for what he did.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that I'm very curious to kind of talk a little bit about as well, is one is what you think or you discuss in the film, the actual agenda, the ultimate, the big picture agenda of this elite, this small group of people that are running. You know, at one point, I think you even compare it to there's one of them for every million of us. That's a very small percentage that is running the show. And,
right.
and, you know, maybe a little bit of what you can touch just slightly on what the agenda is, in your opinion. And then, of course, talk about what you think some of the solutions are.
Yeah. Well, in terms of the agenda, you know, as we followed the money up every different sector, major sector of human endeavor, it turned out that the in this country, the Rockefellers and their cohorts were really running education. And when we got to the top of the agricultural pyramid, oh, whoop, there they are again.
Surprise!
When we got to the top of the money pyramid, there they were. And when you look to who's really pulling the puppet strings on the politicians and so forth. Oh, there they are again. And as what Kimberly said before, is that they figured out if you can fool everybody to let you control money itself, well, of course you're going to be able to buy everybody out until they discover it. And, you know, now people are discovering it. But while they have been doing this, they've been using it not just to make themselves, you know, and their family rich forever, but much more importantly to them, they've been using it to try to gain control over all of the switches and dials for the whole planet. And that, to me, is the global domination agenda. And along the way, they have realized, and there are videotapes where Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was a major advisor for Clinton, and he's one of the main architects of the New World Order and continues to be a major influence even over Obama. He was really Obama's foreign policy advisor in the beginning, and I'm sure still is behind the scenes. He's came out publicly and said on videotape, we've come to realize it's a lot easier to kill a million people than to control them. So part of the agenda is to depopulate, you know, basically to have those who consider themselves to be the elite, and then enough of the rest of us to serve them. And so whether it's wars or pandemics or, you know, chemtrails or pesticides or toxins in the food, you know, the list goes on and on, ways by which those same people seem to be acting out an agenda to make people sick, to make them infertile, or to actually kill them, and meanwhile to dumb them down and keep them afraid and in debt. And the purpose of all that seems to be to finally establish control over the entire world. And that's a lot of what they, and of course, you know, these are not stupid people. They may be very evil in their actions, but they're very shrewd. So they use things like our interest in the climate, or our interest in taking care of the poor, or the sick, or the elderly, or whatever, which, you know, hopefully, you know, virtually everyone shares. They use those to make promises that the politicians end up rarely keeping. But in the meantime, they've succeeded in creating a larger government that socializes more of the functions. And literally what that means is to take over the means of production and provision of services. And then historically, that always leads, socialism always leads to communism, which is where you end up completely taking away all personal property and individual rights, even the freedom of religion or spiritual practice. And so that seems to be their goal, is to create a one world, basically communist state. And we say in the film that David Rockefeller has a quote in there where he really praises Chairman Mao's social experiment with communism in China as one of the most successful experiments he's ever seen. And this is a lot of what the elite want to do, is they want to privatize the profits. And you can see how, you know, the 0.001% has just been vacuuming up the wealth of the planet to themselves at the detriment to of everyone else. But then they want to socialize the losses, and that's where the higher taxes and the bailouts and sending your kids to, you know, to war to get more resources and so forth. It's actually a pretty simple plot. It's not easy to understand at first, and it's not easy to turn to correct it, to obsolete it. But it's actually a very primal and ancient drive amongst afraid people to protect themselves by controlling everyone else. That's what the global domination agenda is about. And in the film, once we realize that, then we go on to, okay, if we really understand, then that can inform solutions that can be commensurate to the problem.
Yeah.
Kimberly, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say, I think it's important, you know, in our process, the point isn't to have it be that there are evil people, you know, that there are evil actions, right? And the way that I have something up on my board, it says, I'm a friend of your soul and an enemy of your project. And it's
interesting.
It's the way that I hold this whole thing. You know, it's really helpful to understand. And, you know, some of the things that Foster just said, like, it takes research to actually validate this stuff. And we did. You know, we've read the books, we've read the quotes from the people themselves, we put the picture together. And it also helped us to understand the worldview. That's what this whole thing is based on. If you believe that the only two options in life are to control or be controlled, it's very understandable to choose to control. And
right.
And then when, you know, on top of that, you have these secret societies and things that operate, you know, in these ways where, like, I don't know if you've seen it. I just saw this documentary on Scientology recently. Great documentary, but, you know, it shows that what they do is they have people just, you know, lay out their greatest insecurity and shame, anything they're ever guilty of, and they video the whole thing. So that if the people ever want to leave, they've got this video to hold over them, especially if they're public figures. And it's the same way in these secret societies with the elite, that there's all this kind of just perverted manipulation and guilt and shame and stuff that goes into it. So the point, you know, we make this very clearly in the movie, the point isn't to hate them. It's to understand the worldview that operates behind this kind of agenda that is, in fact, happening. That's very, you know, it's really a matter of diving into it. And once you get it and the facts that we lay out in the movie, you know, we've done our best to just sort of choose the ones that minimum sufficient. If this is true, then you realize you really need to be aware of things like the aerial sprays that are going on, when you understand that our health and well-being is not the prime objective, then you start to take more responsibility for yourself and your assessment of what's happening, what's in the vaccines, what's in these aerial sprays, what responsibility can I take for myself and my own life. So our point is not to separate and divide. It's to be as inclusive of in our understanding as possible, so that we can take effective action without getting caught up in, oh, these horrible evil people. It's, you know, it's these extremely misguided people who have way too much power, and it appears that when people have power to rule one another, this happens every single time in recorded history. It happens that people abuse that power. So one of the things we look at is like the power, the abuse of power, but and the power to abuse. It's all the way around people's ability to have power over others is, in fact, the seed of tyranny. So people's own awakening and awareness is the seed of the true solution to all of this and the new paradigm that we're all after. And So after we unpack, you know, the severity of the problem and how it functions, we then really work to do what we can to have people recognize that, like we said in the very beginning, tapping into your own purpose. What is your purpose? What did your soul incarnate here to do? And how can you tap into doing that? So, and align your actions and your values. And that's what makes the revolution fun and sustainable and possible to get right. us to this new paradigm, is if it's motivated by people tapping into that. And, you know, I know you asked, and I saw that it's something common in many of your podcasts to talk about sort of serendipity or paranormal phenomenon, things that can't be described solely.
Explain with conventional wisdom, yeah.
Only with conventional wisdom. And one thing I want to add, because I think it's really relevant to our impact here to make the kinds of changes that are needed, is that I once, I bought a house years ago from this old man who was very psychic, and he could do what's called psychometry, which is where I had never been exposed to this. I should say when I got the house from him, but we kind of became friends during the transaction. And psychometry is where you can take an object from somebody mm-hmm. that you don't know, and then sort of tap into that object and know things about the person who normally wears it or who it right. belongs to. So anyway, I had this, like I said, I knew nothing about it. I had a friend who had her mother's bracelet. And so I gave it to Bill, old man Bill, we used to call him, and gave him this bracelet. And he could, you know, he didn't know my friend, didn't know this, her mother from out of town, never saw them. But from holding this bracelet, he could tell that this woman had lost a child recently, my friend's. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed, and then years later, he was wrong. So Bill was Ron Doss's psychic, and we just had all these experiences. And so later, I was caring for him as he was dying, and so he passed, and my cat, I was moving from one place to another, and my cat, through a series of things, was staying with someone in a place she had never been and disappeared, got out and disappeared, and for weeks was disappeared. And oh, wow. So I tried every conventional way to find my cat that I possibly could. And at one point I just summoned Bill. And I said, wow. Bill, I need some of that psychic power here because I really want to just find my cat. So I just sort of went into a state that was no longer relying on my rational mind. And I just got in my car and I started driving until I had the impulse to pull over, which I did. It was at these railroad tracks, and heard go down the tracks, and then kind of heard climb over this fence. And so I just did it all based on these impulses, not on my mind. And lo and behold, I walk down the tracks, I climb over the fence, and there's my cat.
No way. Wow, that's so cool.
So anyway, but I was watching this. I always watch the behind the scenes of movies that I see. I love the making of movies. I'm a filmmaker, and also I grew up around filmmaking, and I really like the stories because I love to be reminded how messy it is to actually create successful things. I think people tend to look and think it's just a smooth process, but it isn't. There's all kinds of starts and stops and self-corrections involved. Anyway, I'll just say it quickly there. I was watching the making of this movie called Ghost. It's from 1990, fabulous movie. It's about this young
couple. That one with Patrick Swayze?
Yeah, exactly. Patrick Swayze, Demi Moore, and Whoopi Goldberg. And this.
Right.
So it's a young couple. The man's murdered, and his spirit stays behind to warn Demi Moore, his lover, of some impending danger. And but as a ghost, he can't impact material objects. And so he teams up with this other ghost who can and says, how can I impact earthly reality, because I want to be able to have her know I'm here to warn her. Anyway, and the ghost explains that it can't be with his mind. He needs to have emotional passion behind his intention in order to successfully impact things, right? And I thought back when I was listening to that, and Bill, you know, what he tapped into was an emotional, passionate experience that this woman had losing a child, right? And what I tapped into when I summoned Bill was the passion that I had to find my cat. That was an emotionally driven motive. And when Patrick Swayze is trying to, you know, cross the veil, have impact on Earth from the other side, he's taught that he needs to engage passionately. And to me, the through line in all of this is that we need to engage passionately, with emotionally, with what it is that we're here to do in order to really have the impact that we need to have. And there's no right answer on that. That, you know, luckily each one of us is here to do our own unique thing. And all that's required, and I say all, I think it's simple. I don't think it's easy, but to really tune in and listen and figure out what is it, who are you, and why did you come, and engage that passionately. And when we do that, I really do believe that we can get to a world where everyone can thrive. So whether it's this
that's such a key
picture
point.
Of looking at, you know, fundamental patterns and ETs and money and global domination agendas and all of that, in the beginning and in the end is our conscious relationship to ourselves and the effective action and the meaningful lives that we can have from doing that.
Yeah, and like your story, which is such a great demonstration, you have an issue at hand, right? You have a problem. You've lost something. There's some sort of a major issue, and you went within and tuned into your heart, essentially, right? And you've got this pure intention, and it's coming from such a good space. And what happens? You're guided to where you need to go. And I think that's a great story to kind of tie into all this. Because I think I couldn't agree more. That's exactly what we need more of in this world. Less thinking and more feeling, you know, getting in touch with that you know, heart space.
Or a good combination of both.
Or a good combination, absolutely.
Yeah.
So as far as a few of the solutions, and it's been a few years, the movie was released in 2011, correct?
Yep, 11-11.
So
2011.
Perfect. So... as far as solutions, you touch on some solutions in the movie, and I'm curious also what your thoughts are, you know, as far as any models or ideas or developments that have happened since then that you think deserve a lot of attention right now.
Austin, why don't you go for that?
Sure. Well, the solutions have been unfolding on a number of different tracks. First of all, as I mentioned earlier, is the what we call our solutions hub network. When we saw that there were so many groups forming naturally around the world, we just provided them a hub on our website where they could find each other. People could find a group of like-minded activists, or a group could check in on other groups to find out who was working on the same issue. For instance, on GMOs, almost every city we went to more than 50, there was almost always at least one GMO group. But we noticed they were all recreating the same wheel. Yeah. So we decided to make this hub and then just send everybody to the hub where they could go and find lawsuits or class action lawsuits or petitions or resource strategies and the other things that virtually every project needs, without having to start all over themselves. So that's become very effective at just making more efficient self-creating solutions groups around the world. But the next one is what we call Thrive Connect. we've been contacted by over 1,000 inventors from around the world since the movie came out who claim to have breakthrough technologies and also are concerned that they would be suppressed, or in many cases they have been suppressed in trying to bring it out. So we've turned into what we've realized is kind of a cosmic dating service of hooking up the philanthropists and investors who have resources to share with the innovators who have either technical projects or social, economic, or environmental projects that they're doing anyway, but that they really need funding. And they usually need security, they need legal help, they need business advice and that type of thing. And so we've been putting together consulting teams of good professionals in each of those areas, and then trying to match up the resources with the innovators' needs. And that is in its early stages still, but we've created an entire infrastructure with template contracts and everything. And we've recently been pledged significant resources from a number of sources to really empower these inventors and innovators to be both protected and successful in getting their things out to the world. And then our most recent one is what we call Thrive Together. We've had a lot of people request kind of more intimate brainstorming time with us and our team. And we created an online think tank called Thrive Together that people subscribe to and then meet once or twice a month online. And we take on a particular topic, you know, whether it's ETs or free energy or global finance or EMF pollution, GMOs, whatever it is. And then we'll either do a kind of a presentation for half an hour ourselves or bring in someone who's more expert. And then for the last hour and a half, we just open it up to questions, comments, insights, real brainstorming with our network. Because people, as you can imagine, you know, like yourselves, who've really been drawn to the conversation that this movie engenders, have a lot of expertise and a lot of, you know, brilliant creativity in all these different areas. And it's exciting for us to get to learn from them and then all together to tap our wisdom to come up with the solutions, with the strategies, with the tactics that can actually make them real.
That's so exciting. And all of that is on thrivemovement.com, correct?
Yes, particularly for people who go there, go to the Solutions Hub section and okay. the Thrive Together section to find out more about what I just described.
Great, great. Now, you said there's about 1,000 or so different inventors that have you've been in contact with. That is just such an incredible number. Is there any particular one that stands out to you as something that is, you know, ready to put to market and that could really cause a shift quickly? Because that's one of the things that, you know, I always think to myself, it's like, what is going to emerge as the way, you know, what is going to become the iPhone or the, you know what I mean? The next big thing. Is there anything that you would, you know, you're particularly excited about?
Oh boy, I wish we had 3 days to answer that one. It's so thrilling. It just moves us to tears continually to see what's already on the planet in terms of, you know, we've been in multiple labs watching free energy devices working. We've been with people who have been consistently curing cancer and various nervous system diseases, whether it be Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS.
Do you know someone that has some developments in that? Because I just had a very close person to me have a mother who is diagnosed with ALS. And I'm, you know, it's something that I, you know, I recently interviewed Nick Polizzi from a Sacred Science documentary. I don't know if you're familiar with that. And that's going the route of using ayahuasca and so forth. But it's something that I'm literally trying to research right now that's just come into my, you know, my life in the last week or so, this news. And so I'd be very curious to hear about anything that you've seen in regards to helping with ALS.
Well, it's a perfect
example. On a personal level.
I can't tell you the names or locations or too much about it because I'm under non-disclosure and it would risk his security. But there is a brilliant inventor who's been doing a startup for a number of years and developed a new molecule which holds nutrients in an extraordinary way and then crosses the skin barrier. It's a transdermal delivery system where you take a shower in these molecules that have been soaked in these nutrients, and it delivers to the cells between 10 and 100 times the amount of nutrients that you could get through any type of organic eating. So they've got videotapes of these people who come in with these various afflictions. They take this shower, and within 5 minutes, they're up walking around. Their shaking is mostly stopped. It just moves you to tears. And at the same time, this person is under heavy harassment right now, has been microwaved, had their life threatened. I sent a security guy down to monitor his situation, and he verified that this is in fact going on. And so he's kind of in hiding, and we're trying to get him the funding to get the security that he needs to be able to complete this thing and get it out. And we've got the same thing for another guy who was consistently curing cancer and has proof with a major medical center. And then he was shut down by the AMA, and there was an assassination attempt on his life. And, you know, and they stole all of his cultures that he'd spent 10 years developing. And he's now in hiding in a foreign country, again, waiting for the funding. So if any of your listeners out there want to fund this type of thing, get in touch with me through info@thrivemovement.com. And hopefully these large amounts of money that have been pledged will come through very soon. And be able to secure all these inventors, and so that everybody on the planet can get access to the wonders that they've come up with.
Wow, that's incredibly exciting and also so sad all at once to hear, you know, when there's these wonderful things that are being developed that can help people, you know, good people who are suffering and families that are suffering. And to think that there's someone out there that wants to, you know, suppress that for monetary gain is just it's sickening.
Yeah, it is. And at the same time, what we're seeing is that old system is crumbling. They're being exposed. Yeah. They're starting to be arrested. They can hardly travel anymore. And as people are catching on to their money scheme, that is disappearing. And there are other forces, a whole nother story, but there are other forces even more powerful around the world who are now obsoleting them. So that major money can move around the planet without being stolen, and empower these people to actually create a world where people can thrive. And there are in our direct experience, there are viable holistic solutions in every single sector where we see these problems that are virtually ready to go. And within just a few years, with the proper funding and protection, it'll be a reality.
Yeah, I agree.
So exciting. So exciting. So you touched on something, you know, there's these forces that are helping to overcome these positive forces that are helping to overcome and really making headway and tearing down some of these walls. In your opinion, you know, do you feel like there is a spiritual revolution, so to speak, that's happening? You know, I talk about this subject quite a bit, that we're all one, we're all extensions of the same consciousness. And I know in my own journey, I've seen so much more acceptance and openness and excitement around this topic. So I'm curious what you're, from your perspective, if you feel like there is indeed a big shift happening in the favor of good, so to speak.
You really want to go for that first?
Well, I have to say I absolutely do. I mean, one of the things about our experience here since Thrive came out is, you know, I mentioned it's 32 million documented views in 27 different languages and the Solutions Hub. So what happens is we hear from people from all over the world, you know, different cultures, different ages, different life experiences, and still what's in common is people who are awake to what's going on and they are absolutely engaged in the most innovative, fabulous solutions. So sometimes I think we're uniquely optimistic, but only because we're able to see what's really happening. out there that people who are, you know, tuned into the mainstream news would just have a horrible view of humanity and what's possible. And our view is, in right. fact, you know, just the opposite, because we're constantly connected to, you know, so many people from all over who really are engaged in fabulous things. And one of, you know, our kind of role and purpose is to provide a structure for fulfillment of what we see is already there. Like, yeah. you know, so as Foster was saying, there's people working on these problems everywhere, but they haven't been sharing the best of their practices with each other in order that we're not reinventing the wheel. So, okay, the Solutions Hub can help do that. And can, you know, one of the things that we do in Thrive Together and with our blogs and our website and all the rest is try to help mirror back to people what we see. Because I think this distorted mirror that the mainstream reflects is really destructive, because it lowers people's expectations of themselves and each other. And what we see is exactly the opposite. So whether it's in these technological innovations, I mean, I think about it all the time. Here are these people at great risk to themselves, because there are people who will suppress at this stage of the game these, you know, innovations and solutions. But here are these people, and they just devote their brilliance to these solutions for humanity. And, you know, I think this combined with open source, combined with 3D printing, combined with people waking up to what's going on, paves the way to a new world that I'm excited about. I'm just so grateful. I'm so grateful I have enough years left to be here to be a part of it and witness it all. So I feel very grateful and excited.
And I fully echo what Kimberly's saying. I'm incredibly optimistic, even though I know that there are very challenging times ahead. And as we look at the data, you know, as Paul Hawkins says in our movie, he recognizes from his research that it's the greatest spiritual movement in history. The combination of the environmental, economic, and justice movement, without being based on dogma, but really being based on a sense of this, of a new paradigm that's recognizing that the universe is alive and that we're all interconnected. You know, Ken Wilber, in his work, says it takes 10% of the population approximately to actually change a paradigm. And then Paul Ray comes along with his work on cultural creatives, and his most recent update on that is that in Japan, in Europe, and in the United States, the number of people who are actually shaping their lives around the environmental justice and economics is around 35%. So we've crossed over that tipping point. And I think the challenge is much more just getting that broadcast and then finding effective means of collaboration. Because for me, the new paradigm, it's not sufficient to say that the essence of the new paradigm is the universe is alive and we're all one. To actually ground that paradigm, I think we in expanding our consciousness, we naturally move into the stage where we recognize that we care enough to actually learn the truth, and then to develop the courage and the will to seriously figure out how to take right action to defend that truth at all costs. And that, I think, is what is completing the new paradigm, what's grounding it out, and will lead quite soon to a world where everybody really does have the opportunity to thrive.
Well, that's super exciting. The work that you guys are doing is so amazing, and I applaud you for all that you're doing. What's in the future? I mean, obviously, Thrive is thriving as it should at thrivemovement.com with some of the stuff that you shared with us. Is it just going to be more of that, trying to tie the pieces together and trying to see how many different of these causes and inventors and organizations that you can support?
Well, that's certainly the thrust of it. The main thing we feel we can do right now is continue the education process, which we're doing, and we're continuing our own learning process to inform that. But then the main thing that we see that we can do is is open up the help to open up the spigots worldwide to where instead of the criminal culprits, you know, who are just festering all this corruption in every system, instead of them having unlimited funds, that sufficient funds are flowing across the planet through an organic network of trust to the people who are doing the best humanitarian work. And so that's really what we're focusing a lot of our actions on now. And as that comes into reality, then we plan to expand Thrive Together into a full-on Thrive TV channel, where we're really Wonderful. Reporting not only on the problems, but mainly on the solutions, with not just theoretical, but practical stories where people are reporting on their own solutions. And then when enough of that is in place to actually show the fulfillment of kind of the promise that was represented in Thrive, then we might even consider doing a Thrive 2.
Wow, that's exciting. That all is so exciting. I look very forward to watching your progress and helping in any way I ever, you know, see fit or capable of doing. And, you know, I guess one question that I have for you, Foster. Kimberly, you knocked it out of the park with the story of a positive paranormal story. And I always love to include anything like that, a story of synchronicity or serendipity. Foster, do you have anything like that you would like to share?
Well, there's certainly a lot of them. My life is sort of pinballed from one of those to the next, just shaping the next chapter. But I would say
Seems to be what it becomes, right?
Yeah, that's right. But I would say the one that's particularly relevant to our conversation today is I have been for a long time, I studied Zen and yoga and self-hypnosis and brainwave biofeedback and Aikido and so forth. And it all led me to the Monroe Institute, where I was training for a while and ended up having an energy experience there using techniques that I had been taught, but with no technology, no entheogens, any assist like that. Had an experience where I went into as powerful an energy state as I had ever experienced in my life, just surges of energy going up and down between my head and my toes. And it was so blissful. I thought, well, this feels really great, but, you know, kind of so what? What can I do with this? And the first question that appeared to me was, well, it really, there were two questions. The first one was, if there is such a thing as guardian angels or guides, which I'd heard a lot about, but I didn't know whether there was any substance to it. If there's any reality to that, you know, I'd appreciate giving me a sign. And instantaneously, there was a glowing kind of egg of light on either side of the bed that I was lying on. And the warmth that they were pouring into me was so transcendent that the tears just started streaming down my cheeks. And I said, okay, thank you. I will never have to ask again. I was still in this state. And I thought, okay, well, what else do I want to ask? So I asked, what is my purpose in life? And again, instantaneously, I found myself kind of in my mind's eye, sitting in the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid in meditation. And all of a sudden, this energy that was so powerful went up my spine, burst out through my crown chakra, at which point the walls of the pyramid kind of opened up and I was just rocketed out into space. And I looked back and eventually found myself just kind of floating out in space. And I looked back and I saw, you know, the blue marble of Earth. And I thought, wow, you know, that is really cool. But what about my question? And then I heard this kind of rushing sound behind me. And I looked back and there was this column of light. It came down and through my body, just completely infused my body, continued through me down to the planet, and then joined in with these filaments, this network of the grid of energy that surrounded the planet. And I got in that moment, not in words, but in the experience of it, that my role was to continue to open to the light and to then share that with the world for anybody who was interested. And that very much shaped the path to making the film Thrive.
Wow, that is an incredible story. So beautiful. I got chills hearing it. So
I want to add one more piece to this because I know I'm going to need to go in just a minute. And I want to be sure and say that for me, the lifeblood of the transformation that is necessary is independent media. And what you're doing and your partner with this show is so right on to me in terms of what's needed. And I know it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of courage. And I just want to acknowledge you for doing it and for then trusting us enough to include us in the conversation with your network.
Well, thank you for that, Foster. That means a lot coming from you guys. I respect you so greatly, what you've done. And so thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Thanks for what you're doing.
Well, guys, this has been absolutely incredible to speak with both of you. I look forward to following your continued success, and maybe we can circle back around and do another one of these down the road, you know, when it seems the time is right. And I would absolutely appreciate and enjoy that. Last question I'd like to leave for you each in 60 seconds or less. What is the meaning of life according to Foster Gamble? And what is the meaning of life according to Kimberly Gamble?
You go first.
You give her time to think about it.
60 seconds or less. All right.
You can go beyond and we probably won't penalize you.
No, we both have to go.
Well, I'll give a short little hologram and expand on it for a moment. And for me, the meaning of life is to continually be discovering and fulfilling the purpose for the spark of consciousness that is who each of us is. And, you know, that's the kind of general answer. But that I think, certainly as I look back on my path, and anyone else who has been around long enough to explore a lot of this, that path is ultimately going to include mastering. And by that, I mean just really coming into alignment with your body, with your emotions, with your mind. And as you do that, as you free yourself up from the blocks, then your spirit, which is who you naturally are, can come through. And as you're doing all that, then the next step is to move outside of yourself and master communication with other human beings so that you can resolve conflict and collaborate harmoniously. And then goes beyond that to relate to the environment, to other species, and finally to really relate to the entire cosmos and any beings out there, and to realize that, in fact, where we started from is we are the entire cosmos speaking through the unique Taurus that is each one of us.
Wow, well said, Foster. my personal response to that is that in my worldview, I am an eternal soul having a temporary experience here as a human being on planet Earth. And my purpose is to evolve my consciousness as a soul, to just use my experience here to evolve in any moment. And that I've, you know, in my view, that's what we're all doing. And it's the reason that I feel the truth of our interconnection and our oneness. And it's also how I experience dealing with the inevitable self-correction that we each need to do, rather than, you know, fall prey to shame or guilt. I'm here to evolve. And so I'm fully present in this moment and I am enough. And I am, that's what I'm doing all the time. And to me, it makes it just so much easier and more fun and more fulfilling to be fully awake in any moment, because it's just a gift of a transient experience here to continue evolving. Consciousness that will continue eternally in whatever form I'm in.
So beautifully said by both of you. Thank you once again so much for being on the show. And I look forward, as I mentioned, to follow your continued success. I have no doubt in my mind whatsoever that you will both continue to thrive. Your intentions are so pure and so good. And so keep up the great work. And we'll circle back around with you maybe in a year or so and do another one of these.
Oh, thank you so much. We do look forward to that.
Thank you very much, Brandon.
Bye for now.
Well, everyone, that concludes our episode. As for all of you out there listening, remember to subscribe to the Positive Head podcast on iTunes and give us a good review while you're at it. Also, check out positivehead.com, where we have brand new wares and other really, you know, cool stuff for you to check out. Otherwise, until next time, remember, as long as you ain't dead, you're already positive ahead. Be well, everyone.